guys? I'm John Sepulveda Dieter. I just want to mention a couple of things. We talked about the doctor's opinion, and this a lot of you guys don't think about it, but it was revolutionary in its time. Because Stephanie and I are both you weren't taking class. I'm in the middle of it, getting drug and alcohol certificate, and one of these classes is on physiology and pharmacology, and talks about all the different drug situations. And right in the beginning of the book, it says the pioneer who was the first professional who said addiction is a disease was Dr. William D. Silkworth, and you can find out about it in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was the first person who said this is not a moral problem, this is a disease. Now, they didn't understand it then, but they're understanding so much more every year about how this works. Okay, this is an actual disease that we have to arrest, and we arrest it a day at a time. It's just like if you had diabetes, if you had a seizure disorder, it's a disease. But we have to take our medicine, and that's what we're all doing here today. We're sort of taking our medicine, and it's an important thing because I mentioned this at a meeting last night. Food addiction is the number one killer in America. When people think of heroin, you think of cocaine. No, food. Over half of teenage bulimics have suicidal ideation, meaning they think about suicide, and one third of teenage bulimics attempt suicide. Okay, so this is serious stuff, and it's amazing that they keep finding out so much more every day about it. And we're going to go into that. Let me just introduce our two speakers, and then I'll hand it over. Stephanie, I've known for I don't know how long we've known each other, for a long, long time, from Orange County, and her husband Tom, who I think is wandering around somewhere. We've all known each other for a long time. Charles, I think the first time you and I met was in Virginia Beach, right? Yeah, at the first Vision for You convention. Yeah. By the way, let me just mention, in every one of our 12-steppers, there's a thing about the Vision for You phone meetings. If you're not familiar with it, it's an OA phone meeting. They meet every day on weekdays at 7 o'clock, and they go through the big book a paragraph or two at a time, and then talk about it. And it's a great meeting. It's incredibly strong. I've been to two of their conventions. Real super strong recovery in all three areas. They can't hear me in the back. Well, we have to find out where the volume is. That's the only trouble. And I'll look at that later. But anyway, you can ask Charles and Stephanie. Both of our members attend this meeting. And also, Sundays they do a different topic on various things. And all these recordings, by the way, are up online at visionforyou.info, which you can get the information at visionforyou.info, with the four being the number four. It's Charles I met again, and I've known for a long time. He's been coming to the birthday party every year. We've done two conventions together. And rather than that, maybe give some more of your actual recovery details, and I'll turn it over to Charles H.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Microphone check.
Is it on?
Yeah. Check. Hey, everybody. How y'all doing today? Hi, my name is Charles H. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Hi, back, and it is a pleasure to be in California. I love this place. I love Colorado, too, I ain't gonna lie. I love California. I know a lot of you guys, and there's a lot of strong recovery here. Just like New York and just like all over the world, but there's a lot of opportunities here as well. I think I worded that right, right? I was cool with that, right? So my job today is to share my experience, strength, and hope from the doc's opinion, along with Stephanie L. And our basic question that we have today is, what does entire abstinence look like to you? And I came here 3,000 miles away from home on today to disturb somebody, to piss somebody off. I'm being real honest, because if I share this message, and this is the only piece of the big book I brought, this is all I need today. This is all I need. But I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope of what it was like, what happened, than what it's like now. So, I never went on diets. I didn't care what I looked like. I wasn't really big on getting girls when I was in high school and things of that nature, but that came a little bit after. It definitely came. I never went on diets. I was a big TV person. If the movie was 3 hours, I was eating 3 hours. I can remember big bowls of cereal and more milk and more cereal, more sugar, more milk, more, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, although people in my family around me at a young age was dying, and I didn't know why, I found out later on, years later, that it was food consumption. But the grave didn't say food consumption. You know, it said, you know, diabetes, it said high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and things of those nature. So it was one day back in 1999, I was working as a security guard, and I was chasing a shoplifter. This is real. This is my story. Straight real. So I was chasing a guy. I had foam coming out of my mouth, and I didn't catch the guy. I was morbidly obese. And then I went back to the store, very upset, very resentful. And then I went to the pantry, and I bought a gallon of fruit punch. And I drank the whole fruit punch. And then I felt like I was going to die. So I told my manager, I got to go somewhere. I got to go to the emergency room. And I went to the emergency room, and my sugar was 967. 967. This was back in 1999. And I want to tell you that for 13 years, I didn't do anything about it. I'd go to the doctor, give me a prescription, I'm leaving. That was my story. I mean, even at that point, like, it didn't register that, you know what, you're going to die. You're going to have a foot amputated, or you're going to have to. It didn't register at that point, right? 2011 November, you know, my diabetic doctor said, you know, why don't you go to Ovaries Anonymous? I said, why? Right? I said, why? That question, that why, I wasn't ready. I wasn't desperate. Every time I got a why, I learned through experience that I wasn't desperate. I'm not willing to go to work on Mondays, but I'm desperate. I don't want to go to work on Mondays. I don't want to talk to sponsors. I'm human. I'm not one of those dudes, oh yeah, everything is good, there's a white picket fence. No, I tell you straight how I feel. I don't care how you feel about it, because I don't want that thing up on me. And then I go act out behind closed doors. I was the guy at Vision for You in 2015 that got a resentment because they didn't have orange juice or ketchup. And I ordered takeout and I pinched my face off. That's me. So anyway, So she said, why don't you go to Ovaries Anonymous? I went to a great meeting, but I wasn't ready because they was like loving on me and, oh, you're a newcomer. I'm like, yo, these people are crazy. You don't even know me. I'm not that guy you want to love on because I'm not a very nice person. I'm keeping official. So I got a sponsor, it was a diabetic sponsor, and he was like, oh, I got diabetes too. Just text me your blood sugars. That ain't good enough because I was eating, you know, 12 whole wheat waffles with whole wheat with low sugar syrup somehow. So that didn't help. So, you know, I went around the sponsor John's Corner, you know, all around. I made the rounds, and it didn't work because I wasn't desperate, right? And then one day in 2012, right, I was like, why not try this thing? Why not try? You know, I always use that word, why? I was always belligerent. I always poked holes in things. That ain't gonna work. That person is late. Y'all know that chapter in Acceptance, right? When the guy was like, he thought he was going home and he's the one that's on the other side of the door. That was me. So I said, why not try this thing? And one day I went to my brother passed away in 2012, late 2012, and I went to Miami. And I was always a Miami Heat fan, so I said, yo, I'm going to go down there. Yeah, my brother passed, and his family lived in Miami, but I want to go to a Miami Heat game, so I might as well go down there. That was my thinking. That I was just, like, self-centered, you know, just thinking about me and all that stuff, right? So I went down there. I did go to Miami Heat game. But I went to a meeting, a face-to-face meeting down there, and somebody took me to a meeting, because I don't know Miami, So they took me to a meeting, and they gave me a number to this phone man. And I'm going to keep it official. I was on the meeting every single day, and it sounded like chalk. It's, you know that earring sound that you hear chalk, and it's like... And it's just annoying. And it sounded like some self-righteous people that act like they know everything and, you know, sounding strong and sounding bold. And I was already belligerent. So I wasn't trying to hear what they was talking about. And it's been like that for years. Why do you share everything? Who are you? Who do you think you, like, if I, you know, my sick mind, I'm like, so you're trying to be popular and overeaters and honest, you're the biggest clown in the circus. But I used to do the same thing. Right? I was guilty of crimes that I charged y'all with. Guilty. Right? Sick, right? And I had to come to California to a birthday party for a dear friend in that meeting to do soul surgery on me. Soul surgery. It was never about the food. It was never about the weight. You know, ground zero is what am I eating? Step one is what's eating me. See, I hear people talk about, you know, you got to do step one 100%. I'm not agreeing with that. I think I got to do ground zero 100%. But I got to be at ground zero to do that 100%. To the best of my ability. Right? So now today, what happened? Thoughts and emotions is why I come to Overeaters Anonymous today. To work these 12 steps, because it's not about the food. It's not about the weight. And I know it sounds like a cliche, but once you put the food down 100%, I don't know about you, but I was so uncomfortable in just being abstinent because I felt everything more. I didn't have the comfort of the pizza. I didn't have the comfort of the whole box of Cheerios and the whole box of milk. I didn't have that comfort anymore. So I was propelled to do something about that. You know, I was propelled to do something about that. And I was one of those guys that, you know, said I was recovered, but I wasn't recovered because I was drill sergeant. I was trying to force people. I was calling people. Why you didn't call me exactly at 12 o'clock and all that nonsense? I was a drill sergeant. And I had more resentments than those people because they weren't following my script. Right? But then when I started really digging into this big book, you know, I know we're talking about the doc's opinion, but I got to refer to working with others when it says we find it a waste of time to chase a man who will not work with you. Go search somebody else. You know? So, what happened? Experience and desperation happened. You know, in entire abstinence, I was a maniac. And keep it real, I wasn't entirely absent. So, I looked at something ground zero, and Ruth Ann, she has a talk on entire abstinence, and it pisses me off every time I listen to it. But I tell you what, that's the beginning of recovery. So I come on today to disturb somebody. Like how I got this, I get disturbed every time I listen to Ruth Ann, because, you know, if I say, all right, I was one of those guys that said, let me know on time, because I ain't trying to, okay, let me know what's good with you.
We're at 10:25.
No, I'm talking about, like, to close this, because we got this whole doctor thing.
Right, yeah, we're at 10:25, so, yeah, 5 minutes.
Okay, so, like, 5 minutes? Gotcha. Yeah. So, What was that just saying?
You're going to piss people off.
Okay, piss people off. Okay, they tie accents, right?
Yeah.
And talk about, you know, you should and all that. I hate to disturb somebody, right? All right. I couldn't change nobody. That vision meaning is powerful because they study the solution, which is described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I came on to say. And I'm not saying this is the only way to do it. I'm just saying if you tried everything else and it didn't work, why don't you try something else? And I'm going to describe later on, when I talk, I'm going to describe my favorite chapter in this big book, and I'm not going to put no glaze on it. No artificial sugar on top of that donut. This is really my favorite paragraph in the big book. And the reason why I say that, because it has the whole program entitled in it. And I'm going to give you a hint. If you draw a line from hopeless to recover, that's all you got to do. Right? So I'm going to pass with that because we got some work to do. I got some disturbing and some pissing off the people. All that I pass. Thank you. Okay, so.
But before we do that, just real quick. Hey, everybody. Just real quick, what we're going to do this morning, Charles told a story, which is awesome. And then we're gonna read the doctor's opinion with you. And we're going to kind of alternate pages. Charles will read a page. He'll share his experience with that. I'll read a page to share my experience with that. But we're going to want you to really think about what entire abstinence means to you and really write about that during lunch. Because when we come back from lunch, I'm going to tell my story for about 15 minutes. And then, excuse me, that's the second my throat. And then we're going to look at some of the Ask a Basket questions, and then you guys are going to share with each other, you know, what entire abstinence means to you. So we really want you to be thinking about that as we read the doctor's opinion together. Because it is the foundation of everything else we do, I do, you know, in this program for my recovery starts in the doctor's opinion. So we're really passionate about that. So Charles is going to start. Any questions on that? I am. Oh, did I not say who I am? Hi, I'm Stephanie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Stephanie.
Really bad critical one, too. But you'll hear about that later. So here's Charles.
That's a good question. Good question. All right, So the doctor's opinion, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the reader will be interested in a medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in this book. So I've got a question. Are you interested in a medical estimate of recovery described in this book? I had to ask myself that question. Because Dr. Silkworth had a lot of experience. Because it says, convincing testimony must surely come from medical men who have had experience with the suffering of our members and have witnessed our return to health. So he's seen alcoholics that were terribly bad, and not bad morally, but just bad from an addiction standpoint. First of all, I'd like you guys to say this with me. I'm good. Say it. I'm good. I'm good enough.
I'm good enough.
And I'm worth it.
And I'm worth it.
Say it again, like you mean it. I'm good. I'm good enough. And I'm worth it. Because you are, because it's going to be some cutting today. There might be some blood around here, right? But you're good. You're worth it. I want to drill that into you. You're worth it. And people are counting on us to recover and carry the message. A message of depth and weight. Not a message of, you know what, I could fit into the wedding dress in a couple of weeks or something like that. Not a message of my cat and my dog and all this nonsense. And I'm not saying it's nonsense or your cat and dog is nonsense, but there's a medical estimate of recovery described in this book, right? And Dr. Silkworth was a special doctor. He wasn't one of those, you know, why don't you go on a diet, or why don't you do this and why don't you do that, right? He was one of those dudes that says, he told the truth. And this doctor's opinion in the big book is the truth. You don't have to defend it. I don't got to defend this. This is the truth. Whether you like it or not, it has no bearing. You don't have to like the truth. Just do it. Right? There's a Nike sign. Just do it. 12 steps. Just do it. Just do it. Anyway, so, you know, I want to jump down. They're going to talk about Bill W., right? In late 1934, he attended a patient who thought he had been a confident businessman of good earning capacity. But he came to regard that he was hopeless. I hope you got your big book open to that page, right? I'd like you to draw a line from hopeless to recovered, and I'm going to explain to you why I like this paragraph the most out of the whole big book. Okay, so follow me. It says, in the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them they must do likewise with still others. This has become the basis of a rapidly growing fellowship of these men and their families. This man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. That's all I got to do one day at a time to stay recovered, right? So, the course of his third treatment, that's good news, because Bill W. didn't get it on his first try. He didn't get it on his 100th try. And if you read Bill's story, you'll hear that he's been trying and trying and trying on his own, and he couldn't get it. That's the whole concept of this book. If we could get it on our own, what the hell are we doing here? What are we doing in a doctor's opinion big book study? I can't get it on my own. I don't know about y'all, but I can't get it on my own. So, Eddie, his drinking partner, he acquired those certain ideas, which weren't the steps yet, because the book wasn't written for 5 years after this. Remember, it says in late 1934, the paragraph before, the steps in the big book was written in April 1939. And just a little history, chapter 11, Bankruptcy of Vision for You, was the last chapter written in the big book. You can check that out in the archives. Just wanted to give you that. A little tidbit. So, the certain ideas he got from Eddie Thatcher in the Oxford group, they were the absolutes, right? The love, the purity, the honesty, and the, what's the other one? You can look it up. Anyway, so, I'm so ready. All right, so, and I love how Dr. Silkworth says, concerning a possible means of recovery. That was humility. He didn't say, this is the only way you can recover. But from his experience, seeing alcoholics come in and out and out and in, he said it was a possible means of recovery, right? And look what he says as well, because he's looking at Bill doing this with people. Remember, Bill asked him, yo, you know, this, I'm letting the cat out of the bag a little early, but Bill asked him, yo, while in the hospital, after Eddie worked with him, after 3 days, can I tell my story to other people? Which is what we're doing 80-something years later, right? Telling our story to other people. That's how this program works, right? It says, as part of his rehabilitation, that means he's still sick too. That means if you're recovered, you're still sick on a daily basis. I want to drill that home, because I don't care how recovered I am. I'm not Mother Teresa, and I'll never have a beach body. I'm serious. Because sometimes you can play yourself out to that point that it's all about you and this and that. I need you. I need you. Because if I tell my story to myself, that ain't gonna work, right? So it says, as a possible means of recovery, he said, as part of his rehabilitation, he commenced, which means begin, to present his conceptions, those conceptions or those ideas he got from Eddie Thatcher, to others. And he said, while he was doing that, right? While Eddie was working with him, he's impressing upon him that they must do likewise with still others. I think that's the hitch where we get hitched at. I don't know if you ever sponsored anybody. Have you ever said, after the 12 step goodbye? Have you ever said, you need to get sponsees? You need to work with others? Where did we miss this? Where did we miss this? Where he says, this thing is tripping. All right. Where he says, he commenced to present his conception, impressing upon them. Are we impressing upon our sponsees that you must sponsor? Or are you scared to sponsor? You should be scared not to sponsor. Because when you don't sponsor, this is what happens. Oh, the food came back. Oh, my cat. It was Christmas time. I didn't get the bonus, so I shoved 10 pounds of cookies down my throat. That's what happens when you commence, when you stop working with other people. When you start saying, my life is too busy. This got to come first. Right? So we're working with people. We need to impress upon them that they must do likewise with still others. This mic is chipping out. But I got a big mouth, so I don't even need a mic. Are we doing that? I want to drill down on that because it says, this has become the basis of a rapid growing fellowship of these men and their families. This man and over 100 others have appeared to recover. I wonder why it's not rapid now. It's not rapid in 2018 now because we're not impressing upon our sponsees to work with others. We're dropping them on their head on step 9. Oh, you did your amends? All right, see you later. We didn't even teach them how to live on a daily basis. We didn't teach them that resentments come every single day. Fear comes every single day. I'm dishonest every single day. We dropped them on their heads when they went halfway through. You know, we played ourselves out. In closing, we played ourselves out when we said, you know the nice that we'll be amazed when we're halfway through. How about getting all the way through and living daily in 10, 11, and 12? This is what Dr. Silkworth said that Evie said to Bill. Impress upon the people you work with to work with others. That's why the fellowship ain't rapidly growing no more. Right? So if you draw that line from hopeless to recovered and follow the instructions in here, in this paragraph, you will become part of a fellowship that's growing again. We need to get back to the basics. Because it says basics in here. With that, I'll pass the mic to my good friend, Stephanie.
Let's see if I can turn it on. Thank you, Charles. I feel really weird sitting because I can't see everybody. So I'm going to try and hold my book and hold the microphone and stand. Is that, can you guys all see me? Can you hear me okay? Okay. So I'm going to actually say who I am to start. I'm Stephanie L. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hey, everybody. And I'm just going to pick it up. So we just finished reading most of that initial letter from Dr. Silkworth, right? We're going to read more about it a little bit later. But I want to pick it up on SFVI. And I'm just going to read a little bit and then talk about it. And I'm going to try and hold my book and do that. So the physician who at our request gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views and another statement which follows. And like Charles said, so and even, you know, like John said as well, Dr. Silkworth was a pioneer. I mean, there are all these alkies who couldn't get sober, who, you know, society had said, just lock them up. Lock them up because there is no cure. There is no hope. I mean, you know, people were at the end of their rope. And then here's this doctor, Dr. Silkworth, in this hospital, in town hospital, who's working with these alkies. It's kind of weird. He said, tell me more. He's working with these alkies, and he's, you know, keep helping them. Something starts to shift, and we're going to learn a little bit more about that. But what he says in this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as normal as the mind. Okay, so when I first came to OA, I read the doctor's opinion. And you know, who here is new? How many newcomers do we have? We have 2, 3, 4 newcomers. Thank you for coming this morning. Thank you for being here. Because I remember what it was like 14 14 years ago, walking into my first OA meeting and going to my first workshop, and I, you know, people tell me to read this book, and I'm like, what the hell? Right? The first time I opened this book, I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? I'm not an alcoholic. I don't get it. And I didn't get the doctor's opinion for a long time. And I can tell you that the core, like Charles said, the core to my admitting and understanding and believing I'm powerless, I'm hopeless, that I need these 12 steps, that I need a higher power, that I need you, the core is here in what we're learning in the doctor's opinion. So if I don't believe I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind, why the hell am I going to do this work? Because like Charles said, I'd rather go home. I'd rather do something else on a Saturday. Why am I going, you know, I don't want to do all this work. It's a lot of work. I want to go home in front of the TV and eat bonbons and, you know, do whatever. And then, you know, whatever. So until I really understand or understood what was going on here in this doctor's opinion, I didn't get it, and I couldn't stop eating. And for those of you who are struggling in this room, I've struggled a lot in and out of this program, and I'm going to tell my story a little bit later, but, you know, I'm almost 3 years out of the 3.5 year relapse where I wanted to die, and I had to be hospitalized because I was ready to do it. So, and that's where the disease brought me. And so until I really understood this, I am different than my fellows, and that's okay. And I'm not different from you. And that's where this fellowship is so amazing for me. Yes. I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm okay. Thank you, John.
Okay.
He wants me to use the big, big, big book. How I use my
book.
It is glasses or bifocals. We're going to be okay. I just have a problem today. I'm needing faces. I know that I'm needing faces. So, my body is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality or outright mental defectives. So, I may be off a little bit, but that's not my problem. My problem is I have this allergy of the body and this obsession of the mind. I'm going to just skip down to the next paragraph. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol tricks us. This is the first time someone said, these guys have an allergy. There's something different about the effect of alcohol on these alcoholics. And I don't know about you, but there's something different about the effect of sugar in my flour for me personally and eating quite a good food than someone else. I have 3 daughters. My youngest daughter can eat a piece of cake. And she can take a few bites and having a conversation. I'm staring at the cake. And my husband and I both run this program. We got this problem. We're like, and she's like, oh, I'm done. And we're like, oh, how do you do that? Because that has never been my experience. I may not eat it all in front of you, but then I'm driving home, I stop at the grocery store, I buy a whole cake, and I eat that on the way home, right? So, I am different, right? That we have an allergy insulin. That's lame in our opinion, as to its soundness may of course mean little, but it's X problem drinkers, and that is huge, what they say right there, is X problem drinkers. I stand before you as a recovered compulsive overeater, and that, people always go, you can't say that! They get really pissed off when you say that you're recovered, but this big book tells me multiple times that I will be recovered if I work these steps. But hold on a second, that doesn't mean I'm cured. Recovered means that I have been restored to some type of sanity. And I always laugh about that because I was never sane. So it's restored me to a semblance of sanity, but I'm sane around the food. You know, I'm not obsessed 24/7. What am I going to eat? How am I going to get it? How am I going to hide it? How am I going to over-exercise? Or what do I do to get rid of it so I don't gain weight? What did I eat last night? How many calories did I ingest? Oh my God, what did I do to myself again? You know, I don't do that anymore. So I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And it tells me here, that is what it promises me if I do this work. That we work out our solution on the spiritual as well as the altruistic plane. We favor hospitalization for the alcoholic who is very jittery or involved. More often than not, and I've just highlighted and underlined in two colors. It is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached. So that says to me that if I'm still in the food, if I'm high on sugar and white flour, or my stomach is like sticking out to here because I've eaten so much, I can't hear the message. I can't. And that's another pretty, for some people, controversial thing to say, is I can't work the steps with the other food. And there are people who maybe can do that. I can't. Because when I'm in the food, all I'm thinking about is the food. My head is foggy. I walk around like a zombie, like the walk. Anyone watch The Walking Dead? Like that was me in relapse. And it's funny because we have this like really long hallway from the couch and that was my best friend in the family room to the kitchen, which was my, you know, and I was like, you know, like walking from there in a fog to get more food. And so how can I work these steps? How can I do this work if I'm in the food? So it's imperative that my brain is clear before I can do this work. So as he has then a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer. So any questions on that page before I turn it back over?
So how do you separate loneliness from brain? Let's say someone's really in the food, so really doing it. Can you say no?
No. So the question is, if someone comes to you or to us and says, I really, really, really want to stop, okay? I want to do this work, but they're not willing to put down the food. Should we say, oh, come back when you're ready? Is that your question?
Well, it's not separating, because their brain, yeah. This is saying their brain needs to be right. And if they really, really don't want one more food handle for us,
right.
And they come to us, and we're working with them, and they're not saying, well, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's coming to us. And I'm saying, someone says yes, and they try,
yeah.
And then it gets super messy.
My experience, well, first of all, it tells us in the book later, if someone is not ready to put it down, then we should find someone else who is, to work the steps with, okay, because the brain needs to be clear, right? My personal experience is, having been a relapse survivor, or survivor, and relapsing multiple times, and many times, asking sponsors, please help me, I'm willing, I'll do whatever, I swear, I'll do whatever, if you tell me to let the father, let the dog. And then they agree to work with me, and then a week later I'm in the food again. Because until I'm ready to stop, until I am truly at that place, there's nothing anyone can do for me. And that is a really sad state to be in. And that's just my experience with it. Because it's funny, at the birthday party every year, I always look around, and there's so many people who sponsor me. Wait, anyone? There might be people in this room who sponsor me. I'm like, there's a big family who sponsor me. I know I have my husband at one point. So I can have the best sponsor in the world, but unless I'm willing, and I don't even know if I'm willing, unless I am in a place of desperation, I can't hear it. And I don't, Charles, do you want to address that one too? Do you have a thought on that?
If you're desperate enough, we'll give you a sponsor and you will recover. If you're not desperate, Bill W. will come back from the dead and you will die from eating. That's my answer.
Now, I don't think that we turn our backs on people. And what I mean by that is I talk to people every day who learn relapse. I call them. I offer my assistance. I often have coffee with them.
I want, you know, offer support. But if someone can't stay out of the food, I can't take them food stuffs. Because there's so many other people who are ready to stay out of the food, who I can take food stuffs and people hear the message, recover, go help someone else, and pass it along. But I don't walk away from those people. I was one of those people who people stopped taking my calls in relapse. People I talked to said they didn't want to catch my disease, like my relapse disease, and it was awful. So I don't turn my back, but I can't take them food stuffs. That's my personal opinion.
I think it's interesting in OA because I think that everyone may do it a little differently. Okay, so like for example, for me, I weigh and measure, and that gives me peace. But for you, it may be a little different. So I think understanding what—that's why we ask you, what does entire abstinence mean to you? Understanding what that looks like for you is so important, right? Because it may not look like the person sitting next to you. Okay, and then the first part of the question, one more time. I think that's different for everyone. For me, I'm clear what that allergy is. For me, that allergy is sugar, white flour, and quantity. I can binge on tofu, and I have. I can binge on carrots, and my palms and my hands turn orange. You know, I can binge on anything. People always say, I've never binged on Brussels sprouts. So, that's what it's for me. What is it for you, Charles?
Yeah, I mean, it's black and white. It's black and white. So, for me, it's black and white. And we're going to address this issue on that page where it says the only thing we suggest is entire abstinence. Everybody talks about that line, but what about the line after that? This immediately puts us into a seething cauldron of debate. You know why? Because people don't want to put down all their food. They know their food. They don't want to put it down. And then they want to come poke holes in the Overeaters Anonymous program. So it's got to be black and white. And in order for you to get to ground zero, you got to be desperate. If you're not desperate, you're not desperate. That's it. Can't change that.
Up to you.
All right.
Ready?
All right. Ready. So I'm going to let's get Stephanie a hand. She killed it. So I like where I like this whole doctor thing, but it says I'm gonna skip down where it says we doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. How humbling was Dr. Silver saying? Like, he wasn't one of those doctors to be like, you know what, this is what you need to do. He had experience. Remember we read that on the first page, that he had experience with the suffering of these men, and they returned to health. So he wasn't an alcoholic, but he had experience with alcoholics, right? Because it says to us, it says, I say this after many years of experience as medical director of one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcoholic and drug addiction. One thing he did say, I think that young lady had a question about allergy. Great question. The doctor's theory, and I know you studied it and you come comforted. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. And just to back up what he's saying, that he doesn't know and he doesn't have the experience, as layman, which is, means doctor, our opinion as to its soundness may of course mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. If you don't pick it up, you ain't got to put it down. Now that sounds insane, right? Try putting it down all the way, and then and keeping it down all the way. It's impossible for a compulsive overeater to keep down their food happily all the way, because when you're abstinent alone, you're going to feel everything better. Anger, resentment, pain, fear, anxiety. And fear means frustration, ego, anger, and resentment. Right? So, So Dr. Silver was saying that moral psychology, which means right from wrong, he doesn't understand an alcoholic brain. He just says you have to put it down 100% and probably work with Bill back in them times, right? Because Bill, because he got it from Eddie got it from Roland, and he gave it to Bill, and Bill was trying to give it to people. He had a spiritual awakening while in the Charlestown Hospital. He realized, and I'm going to drill down on this, that this is good. Many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book came under our care in this hospital. And while here in the hospital, right, he acquired some ideas, the same ideas he got from Eddie, right, from the hospital group, which he's put into practical application at once. Are you putting the food down 100%? And are you working these steps like your hair is on fire? Or are you waiting 6 months? Or are you waiting, or did somebody say you got to wait 90 days? You know, you hear 90 meetings in 90 days. If I could get 90 days, I wouldn't be at this workshop right now. What is the message we hear in Overeaters Anonymous? The man says that Bill W. put these steps into practical application at once. What does at once mean? It don't mean we're going to wait till January or next Monday, or we're going to wait to get zinged up by a vision speaker at the OA birthday party. What are you going to do till then? Are you going to die till you wait till the OA birthday party? Now, I'm going to keep it official with you. Some people are out of time. That's just real. Some people wait till it's too late. Put the practical application into your life at once. Stop waiting for speakers to zing you up. We ain't gonna zing you up. You're gonna feel good and then you're gonna binge. If you're not desperate. Yes, ma'am. Eddie Thatcher is a drinking buddy of Bill W. that he went to the Oxford Group and used their. The Oxford Group is a Christian. They didn't really care about alcoholics, but they had certain ideas, which is, you know, restitution. I forget. John, help me out with that. Help me. They restitution. Yeah, the six tenets.
I don't remember.
Yeah, page 263 gives you the six tenets, and I think that's Dr. Bob's nightmare. But you know, they had some, you know, confession and okay. Thank you. Complete deflation, which is one. Two, dependence and guidance from a higher power. Thank you, Stephanie. Three, moral inventory. Four, confession. Five, restitution. And six, continued work with other alcoholics. I wonder if we get recovered and stop working with people. That's probably right if the fellowship is not rapidly working out. Yes.
How do you explain moral psychology? What does that mean?
It means right from wrong. Like, I know I shouldn't have been binging, but I was biologically mandated to binge because I'm a real compulsive overeater. And I don't have dependence on anything. I think I'm God, and I think I can. You know what's crazy? Thinking that I can fix my own problem. So moral psychology is knowing right from wrong. Well, we know what self-knowledge can do, right? Nothing. Everybody here knows they're bench fools. I'm going to call you out. We all know our bench fools, but we're too dishonest to say it. I dare somebody to get free right now in here. That's what I'm talking about. Anybody else? Get free. Give it up. Go ahead.
Pizza.
All right. Anybody else?
Popcorn.
All right. Get free.
Ice cream.
All right.
Diet ice cream.
Okay. All right. Anybody else?
Get a hot car.
Good. Good. Beautiful. All right. Okay.
Anything.
I hear you. Okay. So, in that question we asked earlier at the beginning of the presentation, these are the things you should, I suggest that you start to write down. And then put it in front of yourself in black and white. Some of us never did that completely. Some of us never did that. That's why ground zero is eluding us. And we can't even get to the second part of step one, which is my life is unmanageable. We know you're powerless because you ain't at ground zero. If you're not admitting, because you're not admitting to yourself. Come on. You're not admitting to yourself, so how can you get to your unmanageability if you're not at ground zero? Yes, ma'am.
Stephanie shared what her issues are. Do you have particular foods or just a quantity of things you can share?
I have particular foods, just like no.
Oh, repeat the question.
Oh, can you repeat the question?
No.
Oh, I got it. Repeat it so that I can repeat it.
If you could share with us some of your personal binge foods or your things that you have to give up.
Okay. If I could share some of my personal binge foods that I have to give up. Yeah, pizza, ice cream, potato chips. You know, and you know what? I found out that I had to give up volume. I had to give up, and I still got to give up some stuff. How about that? Because as you recover, you realize that certain things don't agree with you as you go along in this process. So I'm still in the process of giving up. I'm not that recovered that I'm invincible. Even Superman got some new kryptonite you gotta stay away from. Okay, now anybody else? Any other questions? Okay. So ground zero is, for me, is one step from being 6 foot under. Pretty descriptive? Alright. Any other questions? Alright, so real quick, I want to see if there's some more meat on this page. I want to go to the meat, right? Alright, many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book came under our care in this hospital, and while here, he acquired certain ideas, which he put into practical application at once. And they're talking about Bill W. here. He's asking Dr. Silkworth this. Later, he requested the privilege of being allowed to tell his story to other patients in the hospital that he's at. Thank God he did that, right? Because we wouldn't be here today if he didn't do that. So he says, with some misgiving, that means Dr. Silkworth didn't want to do it. He didn't want to give Bill the authority, or that we're going to touch on that authority thing too. He didn't want to give Bill the authority to tell his story. I wonder how much of us are not submitting to the authority of our food addiction. If you go against the goal, you're going to lose every single time. And right now, some of y'all, binge foods is your authority right now. You're not submitting to it. And that's why you're trying to fight it yourself. And that's why you're struggling. And you're lying and saying that the program don't work. No, you don't work the program. You don't work ground zero. You don't believe that you're about to die from this. You think we're melodramatic. I know I'm telling the truth because I see your faces coming up. Right? Alright, so it says the cages we have followed through have been most interested. In fact, many of them are amazing. This is what he's saying about Bill W. The unselfishness of these men as we have come to know them, the entire absence of profit motive, and their community spirit is indeed inspiring to one who has labored long and wearily in this alcoholic field. They believe in themselves and still more in the power which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. Stop believing in yourself and believe in something greater. Get connected to a power source. And I'm going to quote this before I pass this thing to Stephanie. Simple, page 14, simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn all things over to the Father of life who presides over us all. Stephanie.
All right, Charles. Okay.
Do we have any questions for Charles before we, any other questions before we move on to the next section? Okay. All right, perfect.
So, you guys have a break at 11:15, so I'm going to try, I don't know if we'll get through this next whole page, because there's a lot here, so maybe we'll just stop in the middle. Okay. So, do you guys want to do your break right now?
Yeah.
So, this is a lot of good stuff on this page.
Yes, sure.
In fact, this is my favorite page.
How long is the break?
It's a 10-minute break.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, why don't we take a 10-minute break and then come back at, like, 12 after?